Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C. The influential Northern Elders Forum says it will only endorse a presidential candidate capable of solving the many challenges facing Nigeria.
Eventually, they will pay a price for their judgment and decisions. If they take the right decision that meets the majority of Nigerians, that's fine. If they make mistakes, again, they pay the price for it. What is important is that political parties, candidates should be allowed to exercise their...
The ECOWAS Court declares illegal the Nigerian government's Twitter ban.
The ECOWAS Court, after a considerable analysis of everything that led to the Twitter ban, actually held that the Twitter ban is itself is not justified. It is illegal, it is unconstitutional, it is unlawful, and they actually ordered the Nigerian government to enter a form of undertaking.
And a court in The Gambia sentences five former intelligence officials to death.
Not considering anything. It is so painful for our country, for our family, as young as mine. But like I said, if the judgment is supposed to be a death sentence and that cannot be observed in The Gambia, a life sentence, I believe is okay.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Nigeria, the influential Northern Elders Forum says it will only endorse a presidential candidate capable of solving the many challenges facing the country. The group also expressed concern about deteriorating security and tough socioeconomic conditions. It has established criteria for a candidate to meet before declaring its support in the run-up to the February elections. The remarks come after the presidential candidates from the main political parties chose their running mates. Analysts say the presidential contest is going to be competitive between Asiwaju Bola Ahmed Tinubu, a former Lagos State governor from the ruling All Progressive Congress or APC, and former Vice President Atiku Abubakar from the main opposition People's Democratic Party or PDP. They also warn that former Anambra State Governor Peter Obi from the Labour Party could also be a surprise due to support he is generating from the youth. For more on the thoughts of the Northern Elders Forum, I reached Dr. Hakim Baba Ahmed. He is the spokesperson for the group.
We have made it very clear that what we're looking for is evidence that the parties are fielding candidates that can answer to our current and future challenges as a nation. We're hoping that Nigerians would have learned enough lessons from the last 6-7 years to allow the emergence of credible and strong leadership committed to pulling the nation back from where it is dangerously located, reuniting the country, setting it on a course of recovery, and giving young Nigerians hope that Nigeria can work again. That's what we're looking for.
Reaction that I am getting from Nigeria is that the choice of a Muslim ticket might be more divisive than a move to unite the country, because there is what most people say an unwritten understanding that due to the diversity of religion in Nigeria, most people like to have one religion, and then, you know, the vice or the running mate from another religion. You don't think that is necessary?
What is necessary is that politicians should remain sensitive to sensitive values that determine how Nigerians respond to each other. And they manage our pluralism and our diversity carefully. Eventually, they will pay a price for their judgments and decisions. If they take the right decision that meets the majority of Nigerians, that's fine. If they make mistakes, again, they pay the price for it. What is important is that political parties, candidates should be allowed to exercise their powers. But the electoral process should be the final arbiter, and it must be the final and credible arbiter. If you make a mistake in choosing someone from a particular faith or from a particular part of the country, either as a candidate or as a running mate, let's go to the polls. Let's allow Nigerians to pass a verdict on your decisions. The only thing here that is important beyond the decisions of particular politicians or parties is that the electoral process must be credible enough to allow individual Nigerians to say who they're happy with and who they're not, who they prefer and who they don't. That is the most important thing.
Dr. Babaji, a lot of people have expressed concern about the security situation in the country. The recent attack at the Kuje prison had a lot of people worried, saying that the security situation seemed to be getting out of hand. What is the Northern Elders Forum reaction about that?
The security situation got out of hand a long time ago. If there's anybody who still thinks that it is getting out of hand, he doesn't live in this country. Or maybe the president or his spokesperson. Nigerians live daily with insecurity. We die at the hands of criminals on a daily basis. The only thing that is more worrying about our current situation is the reality that we have to live under the same administration that appears to have lost control of the security for another 8-9 years, I mean 8-9 months. One would only hope that somewhere along the line, if they can't entirely reverse our fortunes in terms of our security, they can at least halt this dangerous slide into total and uncontrollable loss of national security and personal security, because it cannot be worse than it is. It shouldn't be worse than it is.
Should Nigerians expect the Northern Elders Forum to endorse a presidential candidate in the run-up to next year's elections?
If it becomes necessary that we have to exercise a position, we have to take a position where we believe that the position of Nigerians is clearly at stake, and we believe that our intervention will be useful, we will do so. We did this in 2015. We rallied behind President Buhari as another Elders Forum. We rallied very vigorously. We campaigned for him. We supported him. And we were happy that he became president. We did the same thing in 2019. We rallied against him. We told Nigerians not to vote for him again. We rallied against him. We didn't succeed in convincing enough Nigerians not to vote back President Buhari in 2019. And this is where we are today. So if it becomes necessary for us to raise our voice and advise Nigerians that this is the way to go, we will do so.
Dr. Hakim Baba Ahmed is the spokesperson for the influential Northern Elders Forum. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Nigeria, the ECOWAS court has declared illegal the government's ban on Twitter. It adds that the ban was a violation of the AU's African Charter on Political, Human Rights and People's Rights. The court, in its ruling Thursday, ordered the Nigerian government to implement measures to ensure the ban is not repeated and to protect the rights and freedoms of its citizens. The human rights NGO called the One Love Foundation petitioned the ECOWAS court to nullify the ban. It contends that the 7-month Twitter ban violated the constitutional guarantees of the right to free speech. The government banned the social media platform after it deleted a message about a secessionist movement by President Muhammadu Buhari. Twitter said the posting violated its policy against threatening material. For reaction to the ECOWAS court's ruling, I reach attorney Samuel Ihiensekeng Jr. He is the lead lawyer for the One Love Foundation.
The ECOWAS court, after a considerable analysis of everything that led to the Twitter ban, actually held that the Twitter ban itself is not justified. It is illegal, it is unconstitutional, it is unlawful, and they actually ordered the Nigerian government to enter as a form of undertaking and all parties who has dragged the federal government to court before the ECOWAS court to ensure that there is an undertaking from the federal government, the respondents in that matter, not to repeat the shutting down of the microblogging site Twitter service again on the Nigeria media and airspace.
Samuel, the court ordered President Buhari's administration to bear the cost of the proceedings,
yes,
and directed the deputy chief
yes.
registrar to assess the cost accordingly. What is your take on that?
Yes, it's also a landmark ruling by the ECOWAS court, considering that the time and the services and different things that was put into this matter to reach this very favorable conclusion. Considering everything that was put into this matter in terms of logistics, in terms of preparation of documents, in terms of service, exchanging correspondence, in terms of research work, in terms of the lawyers engaging different legal counsel to prosecute this matter at the ECOWAS court, you will know that funds actually went in this regard. So it's actually a considerable and actually a laudable ruling coming from the ECOWAS court. At least it will serve as a deterrent that the rights of Nigerians cannot just be repressed without repercussions.
You know, the cost is going to be significant, and some people suggest that usually rulings by the ECOWAS court are routinely ignored by members of the court. So how will this be enforced, if I may ask you?
Nigeria is a party to the ECOWAS treaty, and by virtue of it being a party to the ECOWAS supplementary treaty, convention, treaty, and every other one, the AGF is, by that virtue of that treaty, mandated actually to comply immediately with the ECOWAS court's judgment. He has no option, mainly in the sense that the orders that were made by the ECOWAS court are mainly declarative in nature. And more importantly is that by virtue of this matter and different advocacy that was carried on Twitter ban, the federal government has before now Ubun actually brought back to the airspace and the media space the Twitter usage by Nigerians. So that in a nutshell, is actually commendable. But however, there's one part of the judgment that is very high significance. That is another directing the federal government to provide effective remedies.
What do you say to those who are saying that usually, the government invoke the issue of sovereignty to get around some of these rules or rulings of regional judicial processes. And that is what they said, an example is what they cited as Nigeria doing by invoking sovereignty to protect life and property. How do you respond to that?
Yes, that aspect of such opinions, that aspect of such arguments, by any state actors, not just Nigeria, is actually unfounded in law. The ECOWAS court, in the course of going through this judgment, actually pronounced on that aspect that no one can hide under the guise of sovereignty and shut down the media airspace. These are fundamental rights immune to every citizen, every organization in this West African state. They cannot hide under the clause of sovereignty to actually shut down such media platforms and such microblogging sites on the social media airspace. The court actually held in very high regard that it amounts to lawfulness for any organization for the government to shut down the media space. So such argument by any of the any of the countries within the ECOWAS region are not realizable, are illegal, and do not actually represent what it means as regards sovereignty. Because nothing as regards the usage or expression of human rights will amount to the sovereignty of any country. No, that argument cannot stand.
Attorney Samuel Ehensekin Jr. is the lead lawyer for the One Love Foundation. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In the Gambia, the family of murdered Solo Sandeng has welcomed as a positive step a court ruling that sentenced 5 former intelligence officials to death. They are accused of killing Sandeng, an opposition political activist, in April 2016. Sandeng, from the United Democratic Party, was a sharp critic of former President Yahya Jammeh. He was arrested in 2016 at a rally and was beaten to death and buried in an unmarked grave. The former intelligence officials accused of killing him include Yankuba Baji, who was the former director general of the National Intelligence Agency, and 4 others. For reaction to the court's ruling, I reached Fatima Sandeng. She is a daughter to the murdered political activist Solo Sandeng.
It was a reaction of a mixed feeling, because the verdict, of course, we welcome it, because this is how it could have gone. I mean, they deserved the maximum sentence in the country. But like I said, a mixed feeling, because sitting in court there, like, my family was listening in, we heard again, the recounting of everything that happened to my dad, how they killed him, how they buried him, which was really gruesome. And that really brings feelings and bad memories. And then in as much as the verdict is in, the family would, of course, have these feelings to deal with in the couple of days to come.
The family members who went to the courtroom to hear all these being recounted, what was their reaction? What did they tell you how they felt when the judgment was announced?
Yeah, I mean, when I speak to any of them, they will tell me, thank God. I mean, I would say the same. I mean, we're really glad that the judgment has been passed. It's been 6 long years that we've been following or going through the prosecution, and then it's been a long time. And the family needed closure. Without the judgment, without the case being closed, then you don't have closure. So everyone in the family, be my immediate siblings, my mom, everyone told me, thank God. It is such an ease today to know that even though this doesn't bring our dad back, it is an ease that the people who were responsible for his death are being brought to book at the moment.
What is the stance of your family concerning how they spent the rest of their life in jail or be killed as the judgment had been passed down?
I mean, I've not spoken to my family extensively on that. As you know, the judgment was given last night, and sometimes you give the family some breathing space, honestly, because it's emotional, and then, you know, give them time to process everything. We've not spoken necessarily about it. But my take would be the death sentence, of course, I know that it might be reduced to a life imprisonment, but at least there is life imprisonment for them. And then we know that they would be in prison for the rest of their lives. That alone also serves for something. We would have wished that, you know, the way they did, they killed my dad without remorse, not considering anything. It is so painful for our country, for our family, as young as mine. But like I said, if the judgment is supposed to be a death sentence and that cannot be observed in the Gambia, a life sentence, I believe, is okay.
Did the murder or the killing of your father force you and or other family members force you into exile pretty much?
Yeah, the family has been in exile for some time, almost a year before we came back to the country after Jammeh lost elections and he left the country. So that happened.
So what is the family's message and what is your message to the people of the Gambia following this ruling?
I would just say that justice for Solo is justice for every Gambian, every victim, every person that was victimized by Jammeh in one way or the other. This judgment was about Solo and his partners, the ones he staged the protest with. But it just resonates for every other Gambian, because every Gambian was victimized directly or indirectly. And then this would serve as a lesson to the people who might be in power now, or who even had committed crimes but are not brought to book yet, that they cannot escape the arms of justice. It will catch up with them one day. And to Jammeh and his accomplices will be the greatest responsibility for the greatest crimes in the Gambia. When we say Jammeh to justice, and when we say we are going to get them, they better believe it, because it's coming to them.
So you want former President Yahya Jammeh to also be brought back to the Gambia to face justice? Is that your stance?
With Jammeh right now, it is critical. Like I said, following Gambia, we know that right now, probably extraditing Jammeh to the Gambia would not be that most possible thing. But then, as the TRC report has said, and also the government white paper, his crimes encompass crimes against humanity, which is that universal jurisdiction can be applied. So Jammeh can be extradited to any country and he could be prosecuted. So this is one thing that is possible. And what we are saying is Jammeh to be brought to justice. And the best ways to do that would come in the long run, and then we're working on that.
Fatima Sangdeng is a daughter to the murdered Gambian political activist Solo Sangdeng. She spoke with me from Rotterdam, the Netherlands. In Liberia, Alexander Cummings, leader of the opposition Alternative National Congress, or ANC, says a recent surge in support will help him defeat incumbent President George Weah in the general election next year. Cummings, who is currently in Washington, where he is meeting business executives, lawmakers, and senior officials on Capitol Hill, says Liberians are not happy with the sharp rise in foods, essential goods and services, and fuel. Cummings, a businessman and philanthropist, says he plans to implement pragmatic solutions to the economic situation that will improve living conditions of citizens. But analysts say without a united opposition with a single presidential candidate, it will be difficult to defeat incumbent President Weah. They add that sharp disagreement between members of the opposition can also make it easier for Weah to win a second and final term next year. To learn more about his trip to Washington and what his objectives and expectations are, I reach Alexander Cummings.
My mission is to do two things primarily. One is to share with stakeholders here my candidacy for the presidency of Liberia, reintroduce myself to some of them, introduce myself to some for the first time, make them aware of the platform, our plans, our thinking around the change necessary in the country. And the second objective is to ask for the help and support in ensuring that we have elections integrity in Liberia, that the will of the Liberian people is manifest through their votes next year. So those two reasons are the reasons why we're here in Washington.
What are your expectations while down here as an aspiring presidential candidate ahead of the next general election in Liberia?
The expectation is to familiarize them with me, share with them some of the challenges the country is facing under the leadership of President Weah, and to hopefully get their support to help the country conduct free and fair elections next year. And so far, the reception has been very good. People understand the issues, the challenges, and without picking sides, they want the will of the Liberian people reflected through their votes next year.
You also contested last election. You had President Weah winning the election. Realistically, what do you think your chances are? Since he's now an incumbent president, and we know in Africa, except in a few cases, it's very difficult to defeat an incumbent in an election.
I've never been more confident, Peter, that our chances are very good that we can defeat President Weah, primarily because of the performance of our president and the suffering being faced by the people of Liberia. His performance, decisions he's made, the state of the economy, the plight of our people, it makes the case for me. And I'm convinced that if we do the work, and we will make President Weah a one-term president. So our prospects are very good. We've got momentum. You know, as evidence of that, Peter, they came up with these bogus charges against me, which have now been dismissed, because they see me as a real threat to them succeeding themselves. So we're very confident that, you know, we can replace President Weah in 2023.
Talking about replacing President Weah in 2023, although a lot of people tell me he's very popular and that economic conditions are not his doing alone, a lot of countries are being affected by the global economic shocks, including the war in Ukraine, among other issues. If Liberians decide to choose you as the next president, what are the two main things you would do immediately within the first 100 days of your presidency?
I'll answer your question, Director Peter, but let me just say there's no question the global economic challenges have affected Liberia. But I also remind Liberians that relative to other countries in the region that have had the same global consequences, they're all doing better than we are. And so it's a manifestation, again, of the leadership or lack of President Weah, and therefore the hardship being faced by Liberian people. But to answer your question specifically about two key things we will do in the first 100 days, one is we will implement a national youth service program. Liberia is a young country, median age is 19. We need to make sure we are addressing the needs of our young people, providing them skills, jobs. So a national youth service program. Second thing we'll do is to focus on Liberian businesses, particularly Liberian market women, making sure we're providing credit and financing to them to help to Liberianize our economy. And then, you know, a third thing, very simply, is ensuring that all Liberians follow the rules, as simple as even the traffic rules, Peter. You know, people just do whatever they want, and we got to restore rule of law into our country. And those simple sort of things will send a right message that, you know, there's change, and we're determined to change our country.
Alexander Cummings is the leader of Liberia's opposition Alternative National Congress, or ANC. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Tanzania, citizens are excited after the government tested a newly built electric railway between the commercial capital Dar es Salaam and Morogoro. Gerson Msigwa is the Director of Information Services and the Chief Government Spokesperson. He says there are plans to extend the electric railway lines to neighboring landlocked countries, including Rwanda, Burundi, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC. Once fully operational after the test, Msigwa says the train will significantly cut down travel time and reduce the cost of shipping goods and services across parts of the country, as well as to neighboring countries. Officials say the 300-kilometer Dar es Salaam to Morogoro line is the first phase of the project. For more on the newly built electric railway and its anticipated impact on economic activities in Tanzania and in neighboring countries, I reached Gerson Msigwa.
We have started our testing the first part from Dar es Salaam to Morogoro. You know, this is one of the huge projects that are done in Tanzania. We are constructing this railway in a standard gauge from Dar es Salaam to Morogoro to Dodoma to Tabora, and then proceed to Mwanza and to Kigoma. And finally, we'll go to neighboring countries of Burundi, Rwanda, and Congo. Now, why is it important, as you have said? You know, Tanzania is transporting a lot of cargo from the port of Dar es Salaam to inside the country and outside the country, because we have eight neighboring countries which are landlocked. So all these are transporting their cargo through roads, and we've been in a serious plan to remove transportation of cargo through roads to the railway so that we save money, and of course we improve the efficiency of transportation, and of course to improve the efficiency of our ports of Dar es Salaam. So this is very important on that side.
I guess, will it only be for cargo, or to transport humans as well?
Cargo and humans, you know. And with cargo, the train will have an ability to travel at 160 kilometers per hour. While with the cargo, it will go by 140 kilometers per hour. So it will do to both of them.
You talked about the project going into other countries, including Rwanda, Burundi, and all that. Are these countries contributing to this infrastructure, or it is solely the project of Tanzania's government expanding to these countries in the East Africa corridor?
No, within Tanzania, we are doing ourselves, and within their countries, they will also do, because, you know, we have some arguments with them on how we can develop the central corridor in accordance with the importance of which in our economy. 2 years ago, President Paul Kagame of Rwanda said he's starting a project of constructing to connect between Kigali and the Isaka of Tanzania. And of course, we are also in a communication with the other neighboring countries, the DR Congo, where we are building it from Kariua to Kalema, where we're going to transport cargo through Lake Tanganyika, and they will go to Kalemi in DR Congo, east of DR Congo. So every country is building on its own, but we have negotiations. We talk with them, and we agree to implement this project because it is a cross-cutting beneficial project to all of us.
How long do you think this project, cooperating with other neighboring countries, will last to ensure that the coordination moves smoothly as planned?
Yeah, it might be difficult to confirm when it will be complete to all the countries, but I can confirm to you that within Tanzania, till the end of next year,
Our railway will be ready from Dar es Salaam to Dodoma. And we have some other projects, because currently we have a contractor who is building a portion from Makutopora. This is Singida to Tabora. And of course, we have just signed another deal, another contract, where the contractor will construct from Tabora to Isaka. And we have another portion, which is from Isaka to Mwanza, is already under construction. Currently, we are also seeing on how we can proceed now from Tabora to Kigoma. And from Kigoma, now we will connect to the neighboring countries.
How are Tanzanians reacting to this project?
They are very excited. Currently, we are using two ways of transportation within this line. We either have to take buses, which takes 8 hours from Dar es Salaam to Dodoma, or you use a flight, which takes an hour. But flight, you know, is expensive. Not all of them can afford to take a flight from Dar es Salaam to Dodoma. So most of them will opt to use a railway, which is from Dodoma to Dar es Salaam. It's going to take 2 hours. So it is a very important project. Tanzanians are very much excited, waiting for when it will be done. And as we are testing, we can get a lot of feedback from them that we are very, very happy. We wish all the best to our government, because we are sure now we can stay in Dodoma and work in Dar, or stay in Dar es Salaam and work in Dodoma, because it will only take 2 hours. So this is a very important project, and people are waiting for it very much.
Gerson Msigwa is the Director of Information Services and the Chief Government Spokesperson. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Somalia's President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud is on a state visit to Kenya to strengthen relations after recent tensions over trade and a maritime border. For VOA, Victoria Amunga reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Relations between Kenya and Somalia have deteriorated in recent years. In December 2020, Mogadishu cut off diplomatic ties and accused Nairobi of meddling in its internal affairs after Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta hosted the political leadership from Somaliland, a breakaway state that Somalia's central government does not recognize. Sheikh Mahmoud's state visit to Kenya is the first since a dispute over contested maritime border between Somalia and Kenya. The International Court of Justice ruled that the border should be adjusted so that Somalia gets rights to most of an oil-rich part of the Indian Ocean. Kenya rejected the ruling. Somalia is Kenya's biggest market for hat, a cultivated stimulant commonly known as miraa in Kenya. Mogadishu stopped importation of the crop when international flights were suspended due to fear of the spread of COVID-19, but lifted the ban under conditions that are keeping Kenyan hat traders out of business. Nairobi and Mogadishu agreed in October 2021 that an amicable resolution of the maritime border dispute that had driven a wedge between them should be reached soon. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Give me chance, then blow with it, then go hide. If I play music, then go dance. Yeah. Say good day. Yes. What about the babes? Yes. Babes from UK. It's your money, me lonely. No. Timba Fago babe. No. Can I touch any kele? Kele to ni kebe. Island boys. Yes. We the carry boys. Yes. Shit ain't get money. My kind money. Olu aloni ganja. Imi loni gula. Fado loni vibe. Fella loni shrine. I just want flex. Me nobody other for my head. And if I push your button, you go push my button. I go rock your body. Where you did? Girl, I'm in the mood. Make I show my face. I don't know how to party, but I learn from parties who never to be caught on fresh. I just want flex. Me nobody allow for my head. And if I push your button, you go push my button. I go rock your body.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed. Guideline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Daniel Brown, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a person suffering from diarrhea cannot be shown the direction to the toilet by a stammerer. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.